It is such a good day for music in this space between the two of you and Aaron and Jim and Holly coming soon. I am so grateful today. So I know that many of you know this, but Tara and I were married twice. Once civil unioned, if you will allow me to make a verb of that, and another time wed. The first was a grand party, and the second was more of a logistical arrangement made into a celebration and, to be honest, a marketing opportunity for the congregation I served at the time. Nonetheless, we dressed up, we said our vows twice, and twice we were celebrated. 5 years later, thinking back, I have no recollection of those vows that we said two times to one another. And I think of this each time I tell couples whose weddings I officiate how their vows are only one expression of a commitment that will need to be re-expressed time and again in the years to come. Perhaps that is my excuse, that Tara and I show each other our promises in other ways now, no need for the original words. And yet, if I recall, they meant something important, stood for something that we could stand on, claimed a sort of ideal that before friends and family felt not only doable, but something to which we would constantly need to strive, and that we would need our village to help make it true time and again. We make a lot of promises to one another in this life, not only in partnerships, but among friendships, to our children, our parents, to the strangers with whom we share the roads. Red lights are acts of faith, no less than for better or worse. Never forget that. Promises abound about who we want to be, who we believe ourselves or our relationships to be, promises that call us back to some starting point, a reset for when we're too far off course. And then, of course, there is, as it is in Unitarian Universalism, promises upon which we build a religion and gather a people. I've often found it odd, if not disheartening, and oh so telling how easy it is for people to discredit Unitarian Universalism as a religion simply because we are covenantal rather than creedal, bound by the sacred promises we create with one another in how we will be with one another, with whatever we deem to be sacred, promises even to ourselves, rather than a statement of belief, a tool for identity. Now, putting aside how Judaism is also of this nature, it is as if promise-making, covenant-building and navigating, vows of the heart and committed intentions has come to be dismissible. Now, maybe it's because our promises and our fulfillment or failure to keep these promises are not necessarily policed by a God that causes some to discredit what we deem to be a faithful moving through the world. Perhaps it is that there are too many of us, like me, who grew up watching James Bond movies and M. Night Shyamalan films, double agents, and an inherent distrust of the reality presented. I also, I know many of you did too, came of age with sexual abuse in the White House, and then later the same unearthed truths about the Catholic Church. Institutions and the people who represent them have never been illustrations of purity or prestige for most in my generation. Words have never held the same weight as behavior. But I'm coming to also wonder if covenant, the only thing that you and I have said yes to, that makes you and I a we, a collective, a people, does covenant hold enough power in our individual lives, in the spirit that motivates or grounds us? Does it hold enough power to create a beloved community in this life, on this earth, as it promises? Especially if, for those whose faith is found in this work and in this exchange of promises, that's us I'm talking about, when so many of us have come to be tested in our trust of words, in the circumstance of vows, in the fulfillment of promises. Does the thing which gathers us do anything more than that? Kathy Fry, winner of last year's auction sermon, she and Bernice, who lit our chalice this morning. And remember, again, you too could be the winner of our auction sermon in just 6 days, has asked me to speak today about the theme of covenant, or in other words, sacred promises. Also, a little bit about forgiveness, she said, and a bit about courage, maybe, and also authenticity, too. That was all part of that conversation. Now, I remember being excited for this sermon after she and I spoke, but it was bigger than I knew. I'll give you a hard time about that later, Kathy. It was perfect timing that Kathy asked me to speak about this and that we met the day after. I spent a morning and then also an afternoon at the local police station to discuss our parking challenges and the increasing tension with our neighbors. And when I say our, I don't mean mine and Tara's, I mean ours. I shared with Kathy how the officer I was working with said, "Look, I drive by on Sundays. I see where folks are parking. I couldn't get to you if I needed to. You've got people 3 deep in some parts, others nuzzled up to the stop sign. And I say to myself," the officer said, "and they're the ones going to church." The officer said this with affection. We both knew Sunday attendance had no magical powers in making any one of us more law-abiding, more thoughtful to safety, less rushed on a muddy morning. There was an appreciation in the end that we are the ones going to church. Imagine if we weren't. A. Powell Davies, who is a prolific Unitarian Universalist preacher from the 20th century, has a quote that I have shared many times here. He writes, "I come to church and would, whether I was a preacher or not, because I fall below my own standards and need to be constantly brought back to them. It is not enough that I should think about the world and its problems at the level of a newspaper report or a magazine discussion. I must have my conscience sharpened, sharpened until it goads me to the most thorough and responsible thinking of which I am capable. I need to be reminded that there are things I must do in the world, unselfish things, things undertaken at the level of idealism. Workaday enthusiasms are not enough. They wear out too soon. I want to experience human nature at its best and be reminded of its highest possibilities. And this happens to me in church." I quote Davies often, not for you, but for me. Do any of you recall my old blue RAV4, the car I used to drive, and how it used to have a bumper sticker on the back? It was about 5x3. Do you remember this? Some of you do, I know, because you remarked how it had a very big, visible chalice, and it said clergy across it, and Unitarian Universalist almost as bold right underneath. Can I tell you that that 5x3 sticker made me a kinder, better, more forgiving driver? That worn piece of sticky note made Tara sit on her hands more times than I can count. An aggressive driver almost driving us off the road, I'd simply yell, "Bumper sticker," and all expressions of what we thought and felt then remained only for those in the car to see. No, we got a new car, and you might notice that we don't have that bumper sticker anymore. But what we also don't have is to remind each other as often about who we want to be in a shared space, or at the end of the day, how we wanted to behave. Some warning, some reminder to the heart, some practice in dressing up as the person we strove to be happened enough times that enough times We now live into those lives more than the ones who's had to scream out warnings. There is something that happens when we make promises. There is something that happens when those promises become part of our identity, once intimate and then public and collective. Wife, parent, Unitarian, Universalist. And when they are recognizable and held to a standard by which we may fall miserably time and time and time again, but to which we can always return. As the Reverend Victoria Safford writes on Covenant, what did Sheila do when she married Joshua? What will actually happen in the moment when Karen vows to live a celibate and simple life within a community dedicated to God? What does Ruth affect when she signs a business contract? What takes place when Dan speaks the Hippocratic Oath as he begins his career as a doctor? What happens when heads of state sign an international agreement regarding law of the seas? What happens when Jill and Sharon pledge their love and friendship for their whole lives long? To act in these ways is to give our word, Safford contends. We send it out and it carries our integrity, our fidelity, our faithfulness, our truth. Our word is still ours, but it calls back to us from the heart of another person or a circle of people within which it now dwells. Such a commitment does not predict the future or set it in stone. It simply makes a certain kind of future possible. This is the power of promises still today. Despite our constant and growing distrust of leaders who seek elections by words rather than deeds, this is the power of vows, a tradition of unions that has yet to erode despite a growing divorce rate. This is the power of covenants and will be, I believe, always, and always greater than a creed. For when these are practiced, one driver on the road at a time, one member of a family, or better yet, a community, it makes a different reality, not just something to believe in, but possible, true, and present. As a friend once said, when I stop believing there are good people in the world, all I have to do to renew my hope is act like one. There may be no promise to our promises. No guarantee of a beloved community, of life universally held in love, of this life, ours, creating heaven on earth, if only we were to act every moment in accordance to our 7 and growing principles. But we begin with these, and with the other sacred intentions we make and make known. And if we do this enough, it may just make a certain kind of future possible. Globally, we can hope, but I assure you, in the deepest places of your personhood, your soul, your spirit, the heart of who you know yourself to be. Kathy laughed when I told her the story of working with the police officer and said, "Yeah, I wonder sometimes if we think there is a covenant switch out there in the lobby that we can just flip on and off as we enter or exit this building. Are our promises for Justin here, just for those who can say yes to them in this exchange, or is it for the rest of the world out there too?" I offer to Kathy and to each of you, by way of the infamous story of Hosea Ballou, an answer to that question. Forefather of Universalism, Ballou was said to have argued theology with the best of them. And one day, taking on a Baptist preacher on the topic of Universalism and punishment, the Baptist preacher said, "Brother Ballou, if I were Universalist and feared not the fires of hell, I could hit you over the head, steal your horse and saddle, and ride away and still go to heaven." Hosea Ballou looked over at him and said, "If you were a Universalist, the idea would never occur to you. I think we've got plenty enough work to do in aligning our own lives to the words we claim and to the identities we hold. When I fear my defeated spirit that questions the weight of words, the circumstances of vows, the fulfillment of promises, I think to each of you and to the person I want to be in part for you, the person I believe you believe me to be. And I think to the people I believe us to be in part for the world, and to the ways we are bound imperfectly but beautifully in the promise that calls us into greater alignment with who we are and how we can be, for us as individuals, for this collective, and for all that is holy. I want something that I can stand on, claim a sort of ideal that before friends and family feels not only doable, but something to which I will need to strive. I need my village's help to make true time and again. Sometimes a bumper sticker will be enough. More often, though, I will need to turn to my faith, to each of you, to the too often dismissed promises by which we have said we will live. I hope you will join me in making this possible and real. So again, does the thing which gathers us do any more than that? If we make it so. Amen.